Good afternoon, everyone. It's Thursday, April 20th, and thanks for joining us at the 360. I'm Ahmed Heger with Emily Must and Nicole Reese, and today we'll be giving you the lowdown on the latest local, national, and international news from East York and around the world. It's currently raining and 6 degrees in Toronto as we look forward to the warmer spring weather. We will head into the newsroom after a short message from our sponsors.
Are you tired of drinking alone? Do you not have any friends to head to the bar with? Well, never drink alone again. Introducing Peanut Meow Cat Wine. Yes, that's right, a wine for your cat. Now your only friend can join you for a drink. Who says being a cat person has to be boring? Coming soon to stores near you.
This is Observer Radio News with the 5 o'clock news. Here is a quick look at local news. Queen's Park aims to make renting in the city much easier. The Ontario government announced that the Ontario's Fair Housing and Fair Housing Plan, which aims to protect tenants from rising rental costs by expanding rent control to all units, closing the post-1991 loophole. Toronto police say that all cops, including those who have committed suicide, will be eligible to be included in its memorial wall at Queen's Park. This is after a settlement they had with the Ontario Human Rights Commission after the suicide of Officer Sergeant Eddie Adamson. Officers who have died from mental health injuries will be considered for inclusion after the memorial wall. Councillor Ron Mosner of Scarborough has died after a lengthy battle with cancer. Councillors took to Twitter to express their condolences to Mosner's family. Flags at City Hall will be at half-mast for the week. And that's a look at local news. Now let's send it to Emily for national news.
Yesterday, President Trump took aim at Canada's milk industry by saying unfair things have happened. The U.S. dairy lobby accused Canada of disregarding trade obligations. The dairy farmers of Canada fought back on Tuesday by denouncing the comments as falsehoods and half-truths. Canadian dairy farmers are confident that Trudeau will continue defending them. Over in British Columbia, one man is dead after yesterday's shooting in Nanaimo. The RCMP were called to a hotel at around 3 a.m. Wednesday, where two bullet cases were found on the floor of the lobby. A suspect is in custody, and the RCMP believes it was a targeted shooting. Constable Gary O'Brien of the Nanaimo RCMP says there is no risk to the public. On a lighter note, today is 4:20, and marijuana lovers are gathering around the country in celebration. On April 20th at 4:20 p.m., Canadians gathering throughout the day at Yonge and Dundas Square and at Parliament Hill will puff, puff, pass at the same time. April 20th is a day for marijuana activists to raise their voice in support of the continued decriminalization and eventually legalization in Canada. That's all from national news. Now here's Nicole for international news.
Thanks, Emily. A spokesperson of Vladimir Putin says the Russian president has no reason to doubt the Chechen leader's assurances that there's no persecution of gays in his republic, despite reports by respected Russian newspaper Novaya Gazeta. The reports have been taken seriously by the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights and prominent international organizations, which have urged the Russian government to investigate. As tensions rise between the U.S. and North Korea, the U.S. is asking Beijing to use its clout with North Korea to rein in its nuclear and missile programs. Pyongyang has ignored Beijing's calls for a suspension of those programs and its request for high-level bilateral talks. The U.S. wants Beijing to do more, including cutting off fuel supplies to North Korea and suspend its nuclear weapon and missile programs. Trump has floated the idea of offering advantageous trade terms in exchange for help, although no details have been released. Over to Australia, where plans to tighten its citizenship rules may require higher English language skills, longer residency, and evidence of integration, such as length of employment. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said the new citizenship test would reflect Australian values instead of the current multiple-choice format. Activist group Get Up criticized the Conservative government of adopting the policies of anti-Muslim minor political party One Nation through the new test. Stay with us because coming up on the 360, Michael Chong talks about electoral reform, a medical professional explains seasonal depression, and we'll speak with a psychologist about the latest dating trend.
If you're like me, you probably feel guilty about your winter weight. You try to eat right, but kale literally tastes like dry garbage. There is a solution. Cover that trash in Kraft Ranch dressing. Turn it into soup and tell your friends about your new superfood diet. Kraft Ranch dressing makes healthy living taste a little less like death.
The Conservative Party is having its leadership election on May 27th. 14 candidates are running to become the successor of Stephen Harper. One of them is Michael Chong, the MP for Wellington Halton Hills. Chong spoke at the George Ignatieff Theater at U of T on March 9th. We spoke about electoral reform and the Reform Act, a bill he proposed which has given more power to MPs from the political parties.
So I want to get also your view on Canada's current voting system. They want to create changes to, from the first past the post. So I was wondering, what's your perspective on that and also people's concerns of it? Do you think it's a working system?
So I think before we can even consider changes to our voting system, we first need to reform political parties. And the reason is simple. Any change to a voting system like proportional representation would give a number of seats in the House of Commons to a political party as party list seats. And currently in our system, party leaders make the final determination and final approval for party candidates. And so if we go to if we embark on electoral reform without first reforming political parties, we in effect give a portion of the seats to the party leader. And that further exacerbates the problem in the House of Commons and in our system of government, which is the concentration of power in the party leaders, particularly the Prime Minister. So my strong view is that before we can even consider reforms like electoral reforms like alternative voting systems, before we can consider changing the first past the post system, we first have to reform political parties. That's part of my agenda in this leadership race, is to reform political parties so that party leaders no longer have the veto over party candidates.
And my next question is about your Reform Act that just got passed was it 2015?
Yeah.
So I was wondering, now as MP, like, can you describe like how that would benefit an MP?
So the bill came into effect the bill was passed into law in June of 2015, and so it's had a pretty big impact on the Conservative Party caucus in the House of Commons. The first thing that's changed is that we elected our interim leader, Rana Ambrose, for the first time. Previously, the interim leader was appointed by the outgoing leader. The second change that's happened is that we elected our caucus chair for the first time. David Sweet, who's a member of parliament from Ontario, was elected caucus chair on a secret ballot vote. The third change that's happened is that the Conservative Party leader has lost the right to expel a member from caucus. That decision now is up to the caucus on a secret ballot vote. So those are three big changes in our party caucus that came as a result of the Reform Act rules.
And also, because this was original plan I heard, it originally came from sometime 2013, or like when you
The bill was first introduced in December 2013.
Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, like, what's the major changes that were brought in before it was passed? Like, changes from the goal that you had to go.
Oh, I see. How was it amended?
Yes.
No, it's okay. The bill was, half the bill was removed. So half the bill was amended by removing half of the bill, and that part of the bill that was removed concerned the party nominations. That part of the bill was amended. That part of the bill was removed. So the original bill took away the power of party leaders to approve party candidates. It took away the power of the party leader to veto party candidates in party nomination contests and gave that power exclusively to local electoral district associations. The bill, as it was amended, removed those provisions and today, party leaders still have a veto over party candidates.
On your website, when you talked about democracy opportunities, when you talked about trying to get more people to take part in the democratic process, can you elaborate on some things like free party membership?
Yeah, we live in an age of the internet and digital communications. By making party membership free, we can attract hundreds of thousands of new people to political parties, hundreds of thousands of new people to the political process, and we can do it very cheaply because of the internet and digital technologies. So I'm proposing that party membership be free and that we go to permanent party membership where somebody who registers as a party member doesn't need to re-register each and every year, that they stay registered as long as they want to. If they are, they want to rescind that party membership, they can always do that at any moment in time. If they move, they can always give notice of change of address. I think that's the way of the future for political parties. I think political parties that continue to charge a membership fee will slowly wither and die.
That was Michael Chong, MP for Wellington Halton Hills and one of the candidates for the Conservative Party leadership. He spoke with me at the George Ignatieff Theater at U of T.
Dr. Levitan spoke with Observer Radio News' Emily Must about this little-known mental illness affecting thousands of Canadians as we enter the spring season. This time of year is when research has unveiled a spike in the number of suicides in Canada. His research has attempted to explain whether nature or nurture contributes to developing a mental illness.
What we know, though, is that rates of suicide peak in the spring. And what that means is that in the population of overall, the general population, there must be something going on to explain that, because that's been found in multiple large-scale studies. And one of the things that we see clinically is that as you go from the winter into the spring, there's often a mix of sort of the winter symptoms that people get, which is feeling low, slowed down, and blue, but combined with increased energy as you go into the spring, right? So that creates what we call a mixed state where people have a combination of low mood but increased energy, and we think that that's what's causing the high rates of suicide. So spring is a high-risk time because it can lead to, for some people, to a nasty combination of symptoms that can actually be very hard to deal with, and in some cases even contribute to suicide. But it's not an official, you know, you're not going to see spring seasonal affective disorder anywhere as an official diagnosis.
Okay, so why is this so uncommonly talked about compared to the winter?
That's a good question. I think it's hard to measure relative to some of the other sorts of things that we measure. You know, it's something that was noted many decades ago, these sorts of rhythms, but you know, I'm not sure exactly why it's not looked at more commonly. Certainly the rate of suicide, as I said, the rates of suicide have gone up, but you know, whether there's a specific mood disorder that's seasonal that causes it, that really hasn't been looked at.
Okay, so what tips would you give to people who are feeling like this in the spring?
Well, definitely they need to, first of all, be safe. So make sure that they see their family doctor if they are starting to feel that their mood is either too low, too high, or mixed. Especially if it's mixed, that's, you know, it's a particularly difficult circumstance, actually. And if they have suicidal thoughts, obviously they have to get help quickly. And there's lots of potential effective treatment, so you know, lots that can be done to help them. But seeing their doctor is what they need to do, see their family doctor. And some family doctors will treat it, others will refer to a specialist.
What's the most common misconception of this mixed state?
Well, I think the most common misconception is simply that spring is a wonderful time, and that the worst time for depression and suicide is the holiday period in the winter, the Christmas holidays. That is a difficult time, but this can be even more dangerous in terms of suicide. So I think it's just a misconception that there's only one seasonal pattern, is what I would say. You know, that it's all about Christmas time and winter, and in reality, there are other seasonal mood problems that people must be aware of, especially the one in the spring because of the lightness.
That was Toronto's own Doctor of Psychiatry, Robert Levitan. He explained to us at Observer Radio News how Canadians could help their friends and family who may be dealing with seasonal affective disorder.
And on a lighter side of news, Catherine Camel is a Toronto-registered psychotherapist. She'll reveal some insight on the psychology of people who cushion their relationships. Catherine Camel has been a relationship and self-esteem expert for over 5 years, and she's been featured in publications such as Flair, Elle, and Canadian Living.
Are you able to provide a general opinion or provide any insight with respect to this kind of dating practice?
It softens the blow. Mm-hmm. It makes a rejection feel a little bit less painful if you've got somebody else there. Mm-hmm. But I think it can be incredibly detrimental because on the one hand, I mean, it prevents you from moving forward with the, sort of the primary relationship, if that's what we want to call it. Right. You're not going to be ever tested or totally available. Mm-hmm. If you've got other people there. So it's unfair, I think, to all parties involved, unless there's an open discussion that, you know, that's what's happening. But if it's evasive, if it's keeping people in the dark, then I think that can be really detrimental.
Where does the detriment lay?
Well, like I mentioned, I mean, if your goal is to ultimately have a close relationship with somebody, if that's what the motivation is,
right,
then if you're not wholeheartedly there with the primary person, if you're keeping other people on the back burner, then you've got your eggs in all these different baskets, but I think it really then prevents a full investment in the relationship. Mm-hmm. It prevents you from being totally available to one person. And again, that's only if the motivation is to be monogamous, then that's where I see it could be detrimental because it doesn't allow you to fully commit to something emotionally and also just in terms of time, in terms of the ability to talk to people consistently, those sorts of things. So I think it can be detrimental there. And also, like I said, if it's keeping people in the dark, if people aren't aware that this is happening, it's not fair to others who may anticipate that the relationship is going somewhere, but they're sort of second choice, that kind of thing.
Why do you think cushioning has become so commonplace instead of going into a relationship wholeheartedly?
I imagine it differs from person to person. For some people, it may be a general discomfort with vulnerability, with fully allowing themselves to be open with one person. Mm-hmm. It may be an insecurity thing, as mm-hmm. you know, the more partners I have, the more confident I feel in myself, the more attractive I feel, the more desirable I feel.
How has today's dating culture changed courtship?
You know, the advent of things like Tinder and Bumble and all of these apps, people are there at your fingertips. It's easier to connect with multiple people at once. It's not the same as traditional dating used to be, where you'd go out, you'd meet someone, you'd court that one person for a little while. I think it's become quite normalized to date in that way, just in the general way society is changing and progressing in that regard.
What does the future hold for dating with this kind of behavior?
Well, I think it's quite commonplace now that that's the way that it's going, and I think it makes it a lot more challenging for people who truly want to have, you know, one partner, that really want to build that connection and, you know, have it turn into something long term. I think the current dating culture doesn't really set us up well for that. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, it increases the availability of people. You meet people that you may not otherwise meet just out and about or in your general social circle. So I think it's kind of a blessing and a curse, the way that things have changed.
How do daters overcome the possibility of cushioning?
I think more than anything, it involves people just need to be honest with one another and open about the process and what it is that they're looking for as they go in the dating world.
Catherine Camel is a registered psychotherapist in Toronto. She was discussing the psychology behind the latest trend in dating, cushioning. And that's it for the 360 for Thursday, April 20th. You can check back with us every Thursday from everyone at the 360. I'm Nicole Reese. Thanks for listening.